9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour is brought to you by Fabaro. Stay tuned to learn how you can win a free HomeKit bundle pack from 9 to 5 Mac and Fabaro. So we changed backends this week. So we used to be hosted somewhere else, and over the last several months, we've been changing how we host podcasts in general. With 9 to 5 Mac Daily, we wanted to do it easier than our old way. And we now have Electric, E-L-E-C-T-R-E-K, has a podcast on green energy and Tesla. On a 9 to 5, Google is doing a daily podcast and a weekend podcast. So check those out. But the way that we're doing it, rather than using a third-party service, is we're hosting with WordPress, where we host 9 to 5 Mac, like the site itself, the content. And for me, as like the primary podcast editor, it makes my workflow like about two-thirds of the work is removed, and it's just like putting it in one place, and it's way easier. So
what we did is set up a pro workflow team and analyze where there were pain points in the podcast production process. It's not just about hardware. It's not just about the equipment you use. It's also the software and services that support it.
That is not too far from the truth. Greg Barbosa, who is our product manager, was kind of like the guy to go to say, hey, this part is not good, and then make it better. And then the developers did that. So, but the one pain point of all that is, rather than like lose our subscribers or ask subscribers to resubscribe to the show with a new URL, what we did was, you know, did some back end work. And then a side effect of that was, I think like every episode was marked as unread. And in some cases downloaded for people. I haven't heard anyone who had it downloaded over Sailor, which I think is like an opt-in thing in most apps. But at least one person had several episodes download over Wi-Fi. Sorry about that. But I think the most of the worst of it was people got alerts for last week's episode again, out of cycle. But alas, here we are. And that's a one-time change. So going forward, we won't have anything happen like that. So hopefully everything goes well this week. And let us know if there's any weirdness that I don't think there should be, though. But let's jump into the news, Mayo. We've got new iPhones to talk about.
Yay!
If you expected this based on last year, then there's no major surprise. But I'm not sure it was super rumored until Sunday, when a Virgin Mobile employee leaked a memo that claimed a product red iPhone 8 and iPhone 8 Plus would launch the next day, which was mostly true. That was on Sunday. And then on Monday, Apple officially announced both new iPhones, right?
Yes, they did. Press release saying they'll be available tomorrow, which I thought was a bit weird for a start. It was like
available to order tomorrow. Yeah,
press release it tomorrow anyway, and just release it on the Tuesday. A bit odd, but like it's a similar formula to last year. Product red, you know, portion of the sale goes to charity, and it's not the high end model. There's nothing for the 10. It's only a red iPhone 8 and iPhone 8 Plus. Mm-hmm. The nicest thing about it, though, is that unlike last year, the product red phones have a black front.
Yeah, it was like the main criticism last year was, I love the red color, but the front of it's white, and I don't like white phones. It would look way better with black and red, and that's what they did this year. They even called out the black and red combination. It was Greg Joswiak in the newsroom press release that said, the special edition product red iPhone features a stunning red and black color combination. It's like, was the very first thing in his line. So
yeah, thankfully they dropped the candy cane look.
Yeah,
like, it wasn't even just the color combination. Like, I think red and black is a lot more svelte than red and white anyway. But even like, it's just, if you're going to buy, an iPhone 8 series, the black bezels are always what I recommended. Like, that's what I always bought from, you know, when before the 10 came out. It's like, I don't like how the white phones kind of windowed the screen with this like plastic, you know, metal, even his glass, it just looks like weird kind of, you know, border. At least when it's black, it kind of blends in more. And especially in some of these marketing images, they really try and like fake an OLED screen, because they use like a black wallpaper at the corners, and then there's like no seam to where the glass is. So if that was, you know, an iPhone 10 display, then it's pretty representative. On the LCD of the iPhone 8, it's not going to be so much. Like, you're still going to see the difference between like the dark gray and the black of the sides, but it is a lot nicer. And when the screen's turned off, you know, it does kind of like blend into one into one thing.
Yeah, it's a super sleek design. So it was rumored on Sunday, officially announced on Monday, available to order on Tuesday, and then this Friday it actually hits stores. And we've seen a lot of these online because a lot of press are getting like hands-on units to check these out. One thing that's kind of weird to me is that the back of it, it still has like the Silver Apple logo like last year, even though the front is black this year. And that also means that the screws and the lightning port are also silver because it matches the logo and not the front. But it's a cool combination. But the biggest problem is that if you are like us, then you probably buy your iPhones when they first come out. Last year, you know, that was the big issue. And then especially this year, like if you really care about the iPhone, then you might have the 10 like us. And so this has been kind of a lesson in seeing cool new Apple things that I have no need to buy, like no temptation to like impulse purchase.
Yeah, I wish they'd do the red, like not off cycle. Like
I would totally buy it, like
come out. Do the red
at least one year.
I'd really consider getting the red phone if they obviously did like a 10 in red and they did it last fall along with the silver and space gray. I would probably get the red just to switch up, like
at least
like
once, black, right?
On the front looks cool, on the back, like even before that when they did the iPhone 7 series, and it's like the red was pretty cool then too, but you know, there's just no chance when it, like you're buying your phone in September or November when you know whenever they first come out, and 5 months on, like people that listen to this podcast have already bought their phones, or they're going to wait for the next generation anyway. Like,
yeah, for the most part. I mean, Apple does sell millions and millions of iPhones every quarter, including, you know, the later quarters right before new iPhones come out. And maybe, I mean, even this year it might make more sense because I think as they get closer to September or November, they probably sell, like, on average, maybe more of the older phones than they do the flagship phones, because it's the people that are still buying them.
Yeah, like, we say it, like, nonchalantly, like, right. Stop buying the phones before the new ones come out. But if you know, they release earnings reports, and unlike watches, they still say how many iPhones they sell, and it goes mm-hmm. from, you know, the hero quarters are, like, 70, 80 million, and then the lowest quarters they have in the year are, like, 55 million units.
Right,
like,
right.
Still, you know, a lot of iPhones.
Yeah.
It's, like, 800,000 a day, even. In the slow quarters, it's like yeah. ridiculous.
I know personally,
red is a cool color. It doesn't cost any more. Some people are going to pick it up. I'm sure the carriers like T-Mobile and Verizon, you know, they like Virgin, they like love it because obviously it matches their branding, so they can like really push it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's nice. It's like I don't think it. I know people say like they release the colors in the spring to kind of get like a mid, you know, cycle sales bump. I don't think that really plays out. Like they never mention on earnings call, like, we boosted our number this quarter by releasing new colors. It's just, I don't think it causes that much of a boost to the numbers. It's just another option for people, and they probably don't do the product red stuff at launch either because of just how much supply there is and demand at the initial go, that you're just splitting up the SKUs if you have more colors to go at the start. And realistically, Apple makes less money on the red ones because they, you know, give a contribution to charity on every sale, and they don't charge more up front, so it means that their profit margins are lower. So if you're thinking like hypocritically, then, you know, they preserve their profits when they know they're going to sell them in the first quarter, and then they roll it out, and then they roll it out later. So I don't think it's like a strategy, oh, we'll sell 5 million more iPhones in this quarter just because we did a different color. I don't think that bears out because they don't mention it. And, you know, for investors, if new colors were a big deal, then they would, but they don't.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so a portion of the proceeds goes to the Product Red group, which goes to fight the spread of HIV and find a cure for AIDS. And but they say that since they began partnering, I think like 11, 12 years ago with Product Red, that they've donated or contributed $160 million. Now, that's over like a decade. So I imagine that the numbers, even if they did do a red phone at launch, would not be like astronomical. It must be like a small portion of the proceeds that go to
It does
to
make me a bit uncomfortable that they don't state like what percentage is actually given to charity.
Yeah, maybe it varies too based on product.
I mean, their marketing's like buy red and give life, and it's like if you take 160 million and say it's over 10 years, like, that's a very, very small fraction right. of Apple's revenue.
Yeah,
total.
So, they donated one-off contributions to other causes.
Yeah, and like obviously they started with iPods and stuff, which are low volume and low prices, but even last year, right, they did it. They did the red phone, so you'd expect it a pretty big bump there. And I think before they did the red phone, it was still over 100 million, so it's not like a huge contribution.
Yeah,
I'm not even sure if it's 1% of the iPhone sale price actually goes to the charity. So
right.
I would be more comfortable with the marketing around it if they'd actually say like how much of your money goes towards it, because it could just be like $2, at which point, you know, you might as well just buy whatever color you really like and give the charity, the change. Like, I think it's a bit sketchy of them not to say like how much actually goes to it. But especially like if they were trading on it being the color and the color alone, like here's the red phone, and then the product red's like, you know, a small subline, but they kind of sell it on the fact that
it's
got
the label on the back of it.
Charity effort, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, one thing about it is a conversation starter. So a red iPhone, because it's mid-cycle, and there have only been two of these so far, it is very rare, and it's not just a case. It's like the iPhone itself. So if you see one in the wild, then it's like, oh, what is that? And then, you know, you can discuss product red because of that. And there is a product red label on the back of it. But, I mean, I am optimistic that eventually they might do one of these at launch with a new iPhone, like maybe next year. I think this is very low chance, but I'm being optimistic to say that maybe they're not doing a 10 this year because they're saving it for next year at launch, which is actually this year. Like this fall, because there was only two colors so far of the iPhone 10. There's space gray and like white. So
silver technically is how they call it.
Yeah, with a white back. So, you know, introduce gold next time, and you're up to three. But you know, maybe if those are, we presume that the 5.8-inch OLED iPhone will look the same as this year. You know, we're not sure how it would look any different. So maybe doing red at launch then would be the thing to do, but maybe.
Yeah, I think they'd do gold probably for the full lineup.
Yeah, like, and then next year there'll be no
rumored before the 10 came out, right? And it was
right.
Like
yeah.
Hard to make and may launch later, and so far we haven't seen it. At this point, I think the chances are very slim, because I think if they're going to do it, they'd have probably done it, you know, April, March time.
Yeah, for a gold
probably
iPhone
even alongside
10.
The product red iPhone 8. Like, here's new colors across the line, but they haven't done so. So I'm kind of thinking the gold's off the table, and who knows why that they can't do a gold 10. Like, obviously there's just slightly different materials on the 10, like it's a glass back, but then you have the stainless steel side. So, and they might not quite get the right coloration they want, or whatever the reason is, they don't have it. But that'd probably be more likely what you'd see for the full lineup. Like,
yeah.
Not necessarily red, but I think they'd expand to at least like gold.
Yeah,
and then there may be
no red 10 this year, also because next year, you know, presume that the iPhone 8 is not in the lineup anymore, and there's no, based on the rumors, there's no new iPhone with the bezel that looks like these iPhones. So then if you're going to do a red iPhone next spring, it needs to be, you know, the 10.
Well, it could be the 6.1-inch one. They could still do the cheapest one in the lineup, right?
That would be too bad, right? Yeah.
You've got the iPhone 10 successor, you've got the iPhone 10 Plus, then you've got the equivalent of what these iPhone 8s are, which would be the 6.1-inch LCD model. So
yeah,
at least it'd be bezel-less by then. Then at least, you know, more acceptable.
Yeah. I mean, before we get away from these iPhone 8 and 8 Pluses that are red, there is one difference aside from the black face this year, which is that the backs of these are no longer all aluminum, only the sides are. The back is mostly glass, and so that kind of gives it a whole new look, you know, even compared to last year, which in the marketing images looks a little bit deeper than what we've seen so far in the hands-on photos. It looks like more vibrant and a little bit lighter in person than it does in some of these photos. And then I think
it looks good, though.
Yeah,
on both
either
the
way.
Website and like the YouTube videos that have mm-hmm. shown them, I think it does look good.
Yeah, there's just no way I could go from using the iPhone 10 to not using the iPhone 10 right now.
Yeah, no way. The compromise for the 10 is they have the leather folio case. But
yes, they give.
Who wants a folio case It's like, do you want a bezel and chin phone? Do you want a flappy case that wraps around the whole thing?
I will defend that. That is if you're going to use a case, that is a very good case. It is the best, like lightest, slimmest folio I've ever seen. I like that case. So I've got three iPhone cases that I kind of rotate from. And then if it had a fourth one, it would just be no case. but I have a black version of the black version of that folio case. And I really like it. Like it's a good folio case.
It's probably the best folio case, but I'm not a fan of the concept of folio cases in general.
So. Clearly. And it's
to get rid of that one.
And it's not even red. It's like berry colored. It's just they just call it red. My silicone case is red. Is a product red case. It's like it's. I think it's the one I use the most when I'm like wearing like running shorts or something because my phone slips like right out of my pocket when I'm doing that.
If you're really dedicated to Apple and the Product Red charity, then you need to go out and buy the Product Red iPod Touch.
Yeah.
That is so old. If you go to buy one, the buy checkout process on the Apple Online Store is still got like gradients and like blue outlines and stuff. Like it's the old website style.
Yeah.
Like, it's still it. But what's weird to me is I was like, oh, it's because they haven't updated it. But then you go on the Mac Mini, which is also as old, but the Mac Mini checkout page is actually new and modern and like flat style.
Yeah,
it's just for so the iPod Touch is like outdated and it's like a blast from the past when you go out to buy one of those, which mm-hmm. nicely reflects the actual product.
I do want to give a shout out to the red iPhone 8 ad.
The ad is cool.
It is yes, it's like hypnotizing how good it is. It really makes the phone like it really teases you about how good a red iPhone 10 would look because they do intentionally like black and red as the theme, and it's mostly just like the outline of the phone. Like it almost looks like if the iPhone 10 had no notch and then had like a speaker embedded and the home button embedded like in the screen, because most of it is just like the silhouette of the iPhone kind of floating around. But check out the ad if you haven't seen it yet. It's really good. And then something that we didn't get this week, even though we have new iPhone colors coming out, is the AirPower Mat. So every time there's a new Apple does anything new now, it's the new normal thing to do to say, where is AirPower? And the thing with that is Apple said this is a sneak peek of something coming next year. And so we have a long time before it's late. You know, I remember.
Yeah, we're not even halfway through the year yet.
Right. This isn't quite like last year. Whenever I said HomePod isn't late, we're not in December yet. And then like a week later, they said it's going to be delayed. We're not quite in that territory yet. So one thing that stood out to me, I was looking back this week at the AirPower preview and to see like how did they frame it. They mentioned in the keynote that. This was Phil Schiller. He said that, we know how to do this, talking about charging multiple things wirelessly with one pad, which is not a Qi thing yet. And then he says, we know how to intelligently work together and communicate with each other to manage the charging. So I think that means that, like, everything doesn't just charge, like, 0 to 100 in, like, a dumb way. But I guess the iPhone, the Apple Watch, and the AirPods kind of can intelligently, probably based on the iPhone, decide like share power, intelligently. And part of me wonders if the reason this isn't coming out sooner than later is that maybe the same team that works on like the iOS battery stuff and that came in 11.3 would also be experts that work on this stuff, because it's all power related and battery related. So made me wonder if maybe there was a group of people who kind of got pulled off of the project for a little bit to build up these features that came out of nowhere. I mean, Apple didn't expect to have to work on battery stuff for several months like they did.
That's true. Yeah. But again, it's not like they have a near timeline. Like they said next year, at this point, it might not come out until the new phones come out. Like,
yeah.
They could do the AirPower Mat alongside the 2018 phones. So it's like...
Yeah,
they got a while left. Like, we're still waiting for it to clear FCC. We're not sure exactly where the holdup is. Apparently, they're going to take this AirPower intelligence to the standards bodies eventually, and that mm-hmm. we haven't seen any signs of that happening yet either. So they're just kind of waiting around for it, for something that I think has actually been really cool when it actually arrives. It might be expensive, but I think the actual features and functionality on offer are very compelling. Like, charging everything on one mat is nice.
Yeah, it's going to be expensive. I think it will be weird if it comes to WWDC, that'll be like, okay, it's 2018, as you said, and not before the next event. But if it's with the new iPhones in the fall, I think that will be weird because they showed ads with the iPhone 8 and 10 with this thing. I think if there was any kind of a mistake in this whole thing, like I'm fine with them showing it early. I like that versus it being like rumored for a while and then like, okay, where isn't that rumor going to pan out?
And so I think there was a purpose for them showing this early because they obviously had Qi charging in the phones. And if they just did a Belkin and a Mophi on stage, you know, mm-hmm. the official sanctioned Qi chargers and nothing else, people would be complaining at Apple for not making their own Qi charger, and they would be like this, like, ooh, I don't know whether I should buy this or not, because maybe Apple's doing one in the future. Like, because obviously there were even rumors before the event that they were going to do one of some capacity.
Yeah.
So I think it put them in, like, a catch-22, where if they didn't say a word about it, especially if it's not coming until, like, September, then you might have some people who don't want to adopt. Like, I know that I would have bought my own Qi charger by now if I didn't think the air power mat was coming, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if I would have been more bummed out if they hadn't said a word, I then bought 3 Qi chargers for my room, and then, you know, in April they were like, hey, now you don't need these, you can just buy R1 instead. So, and it shows that they have, like, a cohesive vision of the wireless world, right? Like, there would be a lot of criticism that, oh, Apple is not, in the same way that I think it's stupid they don't do their own, they don't do updated, like, Wi-Fi routers, it's like, oh, they're not doing their own Qi charging, you know, solution, when what they really have in the wings is something that's pushing the industry forward and actually innovative, and it just wasn't ready. So I think showing it at the event made a lot of sense for at least, like, the storyline, and explain to customers, like, you can buy these Qi chargers now, and then next year you can buy our thing if you want, or you can just hold out and wait. And there obviously a big penalty to that for them was they actually tipped the hat on other products, right? Because they had to show the AirPods with wireless charging mm-hmm. ahead of schedule as well. Like, it's not just this mat. There might be people that aren't buying AirPods right now because they're waiting for the wireless charging models.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, so we saw those AirPods
waiting, and so they must have considered it, like, properly.
Yeah, I remember we saw those AirPods in the iOS 11 GM leak, and we weren't sure, like, why they were different, why they had that charging light on the inside. We just knew that they were outside. New AirPods. Yeah. On the outside, we just knew that there were new AirPods, and the light moved. And then at the event, it was like, oh, yeah. I mean, so I hope it comes soon. But I think the only like, downside, really, you know, I'm not sure that AirPod sales are being affected, but there are a lot of vocal people who react as if AirPower was announced as, like, coming soon, and they said next year. And maybe you need to understand Apple's language to interpret that correctly, because maybe you think it, you know, 2018 means early 2018, but they tend to say, like, early 2018, next year, or in the case of the Mac Pro that we'll discuss in a moment, you know, after this year, which means maybe next year, maybe the next year. And so based on Apple's, like, once you know their language, then you kind of expect that it can be anytime in 2018. And frankly, I mean, I don't think they know when it's going to be ready either, or else they'd give somebody a clue. I think they're still working on it, and it would be a bummer if it wasn't this year. But, like, I haven't ruled out in my own mind, like, getting into November and then Apple saying we need a little more time.
Like, now that'd, like, be pretty rough.
Yeah,
like if they go more than a year since they originally announced it, that'd be pretty awkward.
Yeah, I mean, it fits into the camp of, like, AirPlay 2 and AirPods needed a little more time, HomePod needed a little more time. Like, that is a true delay, and that is, like, Apple's go-to line, is we need a little more time. We're not there yet with AirPower, though, so we're still good there. We're still on track. But
how much are you expecting this mat to cost?
Too much. No less than $150, and closer to $200 than $150. So, like, $180 would feel about right, which is too much, but also compelling enough to buy.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping that it's about $150. Like, I think that's pretty acceptable. Like, that you can buy a Qi charger from the Apple Store for $50, $60 for, you know, and then it charges a single thing. Mm-hmm. This has convenience and some nice features, like the UI on the screen shows the charging percentages of all the devices on the mat, for instance.
Yeah.
And obviously it can do 3 things at once, or, like, 2 phones at once. So if you do $60 times 3, that's slightly more. That's like $180. But at the same time, I don't think you can persuade consumers just by doing, you know, a multiplication of 3 things into one. Like, doesn't quite work out like that, because obviously you can only put it in one place in the house. Like, you can't put it one downstairs and one upstairs on one thing.
Yeah.
But I think your $150, $200 range is probably accurate. And in my head, I've been thinking, like, $150, but I would not be surprised if it was, like, $199. Like, $200 yeah. seems like the upper limit for it, though.
Yeah. I mean, look at the trackpad is you know, $100, $150, I guess, if you're Space Gray. Yeah, mouse.
Yeah, the iPad leather sleeve is like $130, and that's just a dumb sleeve.
Right. Yeah, and for an individual, you're not really competing against three wireless chargers, because your AirPods can't do that yet, and there's no like individual AirPods charging mat yet. So it's you know, the math is just totally whatever Apple wants it to be.
Yeah, and they said they're gonna sell a case so you can upgrade your current AirPods if you don't want to buy whatever second generation model comes along.
Yeah,
but no doubt that case would be $69, which is how much the current case costs if you lose it. So
when it does come out,
there are going to be a lot of like, Apple's making wireless charging for like $270. Oh, you know, there's going to be a lot of complaining like that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, just look at how much they charge for high speed charging. Like, if you want to get a higher wattage brick and the right USB-C cable to charge something fast, it's way too expensive. But if that's what you want, then you need to pay the premium from Apple. So I fully expect that for AirPower as well. And I really hope that a second-gen AirPods, whatever the change is, especially if it's the voice-activated Siri stuff without, you know, using a tap gesture, I hope that's released within, you know, a few months of AirPower, if not at the same time, because I would be tempted, of course, to buy a replacement case just to have the full AirPower experience, but it would make a whole lot more sense financially just to buy new AirPods that come with the case, you know, so I hope it's...
In which case, you're looking at September.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe if that's when the new AirPods are ready, because that's a whole other timeline, I guess, you know, as a separate report. That isn't something that's been... They've shown the case, but they've not shown second-gen AirPods themselves. Exactly, so that's a whole other thing. 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Fibaro, the makers of UL-certified smart home products that guarantee a reliable HomeKit experience. 9to5 Mac has teamed up with Fibaro to offer a special HomeKit bundle giveaway, which includes 4 products valued at over $250. Included in the bundle is Fibaro's door and window sensor, which detects contact, tampering, and even temperature, motion sensor, which changes color based on temperature, flood sensor, which detects leaks, tampering, and temperature, and the new HomeKit version of the button, which lets you assign up to 3 actions, including HomeKit scenes, to different clicks. To win this HomeKit bundle, just look for the giveaway link in the show notes or on 9to5mac.com, and check out this week's installment of HomeKit Weekly to learn how to put HomeKit sensors to work with automation. Our thanks to Fibaro for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour. All right, let's talk about the Mac Pro now. This was a story that came out like almost to the anniversary of the year ago story, which was last April. Apple finally acknowledged, you know, a loud vocal part of the Apple community that wanted a new Mac Pro that, you know, or faster Macs in general. And they did that by saying, we're making the iMac Pro for later this year. They eventually showed that at WWDC and then released it in December. And then they also said, we're going to make a modular Mac Pro with a Pro display sometime after this year. That was last year. And my expectation for this was kind of like, maybe we'll see a teaser at WWDC and then, you know, optimistically a release in December, kind of the same thing as the iMac Pro, but a year later. I think correctly, Apple got ahead of that, because they're not going to do that, at least release this year. And they told TechCrunch that they're not going to release Mac Pro this year. It'll be next year. So not 2020, but not 2018. And there's a new Pro workflow team.
Yeah, the workflow team's like the more interesting part of this is like they basically are hiring video artists, photographers, musicians, music engineers. I'm not quite sure what they do. Like, what are they making? Are they making like Apple's ads and stuff? Like, it's not entirely clear what their role is. But the point of this team is that they apparently feedback directly to the people that design the Macs for professionals. And the big thing last year was that a professional spans the gamut of things. Like, it's not just a developer. There's many different classifications of a professional workflow use case. And
yeah,
one thing Apple said was that if we want to really get the best feedback, we have to bring these people in-house, because if you're in like a movie studio, you can't share proprietary projects or things that are under wraps. You can't just like bring them out to the Apple campus and like demo it for 2 days and say this is where stuff, because there's contractual problems there and like NDAs and stuff. So they've essentially like bought out this team of people that are flagging up issues, and Apple's incorporating them. So hopefully someone brought up the keyboards breaking and sticking. That'd be nice.
You could probably make a pretty good Twitter list for Apple to follow and get some.
Yeah, I mean, some of these things, it's like you don't need people to tell you like the keyboards aren't reliable. you'd hope that Phil Schiller knows that himself, if assuming he uses the product. Like you'd hope so. I think it's a cool thing where they have like people on house now that's their job, as like their output is almost secondary to them just existing to tell them where it's gone wrong, and that's not just hardware, that's also relating to like the software and the apps they use, as well as third party apps and how that works with the next operating systems. And we've heard a lot of complaints, especially in the last year, about some more niche, you know, music accessories and video accessories like breaking when the operating systems update. And if this team does its job correctly and Apple actually listens to it, then you'd hope that that stuff is minimized going forward, because they'd be able to test it out ahead of time and say, you know, this is a problem and we need to sort this out. There is also always the issue that if you're hiring like videographers and 3D graphics people, that you end up just catering your products just to the people that you've got, and you know, they're not hiring the entire range. Like you might make a Mac that's great for a video editor, but then is terrible for whatever creative professional you haven't gotten, you know, hasn't got a direct line to Phil Schiller. I mean, one of the big categories they didn't mention was software development, right? Mm-hmm. And now Apple obviously has a lot of Mac software developers in-house. And I think I like tweeted about it. So I was like, they didn't mention software development here. And that's a big use case for Pro Max. And everyone was like, you know, they've got their own engineering teams. At the same time, they released the 2013 Mac Pro, which had dual graphics cards and a mediocre CPU in it, and dual graphics cards that weren't even high end. You know, they had to be lower spec because there were two of them. And the whole premise was to do parallel work on OpenCL. And that turned out to not be a very good software development machine, despite them being, you know, a very heavily software dominated company. So I don't think it's as easy as just saying, well, they're there. Because I think Apple wants most iOS development stuff to now happen on iMac Pro, not this Mac Pro thing. Like, the iMac Pro is a great computer for development and iteration and compiling and all that sort of stuff. It's all in one, and it's a lot sleeker and it's a lot nicer. And I think that's where they're pushing as many people as they can do. But again, there are a lot of developers waiting on this Mac Pro modular thing. And they might be left disappointed. And if you're stringing out for this long, you're building this up, right? You're building anticipation for this like mythical machine that's going to solve everyone's problems. Like, no, you're going to rectify the problems of the 2013 one. You're going to make it even better, and you're going to listen to all the needs of you know, the professional market in this product. We've even got people that are going to tell us what to do. And if they don't deliver on it, there's going to be a riot. Like, this is getting built up a lot. And like you said, them preempting this now in April, I think pretty clearly says there's not going to be any word about it at WWDC. Not a sneak peek of any kind, and it might all happen next year entirely. Like, I was kind of thinking, because their language last year was not this year, so it wasn't a 2017 thing. I think that set a lot of people up to think that there was at least going to be like some a reveal of the product in 2018, and this is definitely a 2019 thing. I think that's all you're going to get, and you won't see exactly what it is until next year.
Yeah, I think even if Apple did a teaser like reveal of the design this year at WWDC, even if it's like super cool, that no matter how amazing the design is, I mean, the 2013 design was pretty cool for a computer of that caliber. No matter what you do this year, unless it's available, no one's going to care. It's like, oh, that's why you couldn't release just a black box with killer specs, is because you want it to look like that.
I hate that argument, by the way.
Oh,
like,
no, I know.
There's so many people on Twitter are like, oh, they should just release this boring PC box and put some nice components in it and make it run macOS. And it's like, sure, but you could, if you say that, then you're just losing what makes Apple Apple in the first place, right? Like, oh, why don't you, you know, make an operating system that's terrible and doesn't look very nice? It's like, it's not, is not going towards what the company believes in, right? Like, don't you want them to be making pro-matter products that they actually, like, care and think about, like, and aren't just, right, like, second-tier citizens? Because you see, you go down the role of, oh, you don't really care, just put some components in a box. You're going back to the, oh, Apple doesn't care about professionals. Like, there's not a big jump from just do something that you don't really care about to don't care about us. Like, I think it's such a slippery slope when you go down that road, and, like, if they have this cool thing in mind, as long as it is functional, practical, and pretty slick when it gets there, then they'll be rewarded for it in spades. It's just...
Yeah, I just don't think that showing the design is going to satisfy a lot of people, that might actually backfire, you know? I mean, it would be cool
And I think the iMac Pro has helped the messaging. Like, the iMac Pro is good. Even if it doesn't appeal to everybody, it shows that Apple can deliver, like, high-performance workstation machines that are cool, functional, powerful, and pretty. Like,
yeah.
And it sets it up good. Like, if you didn't have the iMac Pro, there'd be even more speculation that Apple doesn't know, you know, what pros need, quote unquote. So I think they're on a decent track. And as it stands now, with like a general 2-year development cycle on the product, it's pretty clear that they only really started considering this like at the very, very start of 2017. Like, they had the roundtable in April, and they probably had decided they were going to change up. Not immediately in April itself, but in those first couple of months of the year, that they were, you know, reassessing the pro lines.
Yeah.
Then if you have like a 2-year development flow that comes 2019, pretty neatly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was a chance that the iMac Pro wasn't ready in December, because they showed it at WWDC and they said coming in December, and then it was like near the end of December, and then not even all of them were ready yet. It was just the two entry and the $5,000 model, like, what was it, 8-core and 10-core, but then to get more than that, it was in January.
And they randomly added a 14-core option they never mentioned before as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that work was still going on for a reason, and you have to imagine that it's either the same team or a lot of overlap of people that work on iMac Pro and work on Mac Pro, and that you kind of need to get the iMac Pro out of the door before you can really dedicate to Mac Pro completely. So, yeah, I mean, again, with this, like, now they're saying 2019, it's not a changing what they originally said. They were careful originally to say not this year, you know, last year. And here we are. And I, you know, there's this big, like, for all these different products, like, I think AirPlay 2 is like the worst one, where they show it off and then it might not actually make it into iOS 11. Like, it probably will with 11.4, but it'll probably be on the same day that they show iOS 12. And that is
messages in iCloud and AirPlay are like the biggest.
Yeah, yeah, those are fumbles, like, seriously. And
AirPlay 2, like, those core features were advertised for the HomePod as well, you know, yes, like multi-room, yeah, stereo. And so not only is it like this software thing, it was also two flagship features of a brand new hardware category have also been pushed back to later in the year. Like,
yeah, things that make HomePod like Sonos, not things that make HomePod like it's fine today, but it'll be better with these features. But showing the Mac Pro, there was just talking about it, like, there was such a reason for it, because the 2013 Mac Pro was just so old last year, and they had no update for it. Like, the best they could do was sell higher end specs of it, like higher end configs of it, for a lower price. Like, the entry level price was the same, but they sold you a higher configuration for that price, you know, last year. I mean, I just can't imagine, like, the community response right now if they never had that teaser.
If they never said a word about anything.
Yeah, but I think people...
It'd be ridiculously bad.
Yes, I think people grouping all these things that are pre-announced for various reasons together. I mean, the iPhone was announced before it was released. The iPad was the same way. The Sailor iPad came after that. Like, you know, it happens every time for different reasons and for different durations.
The 2013 Mac Pro was pre-teased in that email.
Because
it was like, we've got something really, really good for Mac professionals coming soon.
It was WWDC teaser, and then December almost 31st release.
And you're right. It was the year before. Like, it was
because people were so, they were so over the
cheese grater. Everyone was getting it hyped up, and then it came out eventually.
Yeah, people were so over the cheese grater. They were like, update this thing, you know. But yeah,
like, there was plenty justification for them pre-announcing it when they did. Like, it cut off a lot of the negativity around it. And obviously, they made a mistake, right? Like, we're not in this mess because they executed this perfectly. They clearly had a problem with their professional line, and it seems like they only really course corrected at the beginning of 2017, probably about that time, maybe just before Christmas, like around that era, they changed paths. But if they hadn't said anything for 2 years, like, people would be up in arms, like, barricading the door down. Like, it would be ridiculous. Like, before April 2017, people were literally saying Apple doesn't care about pros at all. Like, that was the line, and it was almost assumed at that point. If they hadn't said anything, they were literally done with it. It was the same time when the LG UltraFine display was having all its problems, and they pulled out the display market, and then they calmed those fears, and they can't do this. Like, they had to say something about Learn.
Yeah.
And they actually revealed quite a lot. Remember, they pre-announced the Pro iMac coming later in the year, which turned out to be the iMac Pro. Like, when they said Pro iMac configurations at the time, it wasn't clear if they meant, like, a whole new line or just, like, a faster version of the high-end iMacs refresh. Yeah. And it turned out to be something bigger than what it was. And all of that stuff was a good marketing and PR move, given the failures that had happened before it, right? Like, obviously, you could go back in time and say they should never have screwed up the pro side of the industry before 2017. But obviously, taking that as a given, I think they've acted pretty well since then. And the iMac Pro is a very good step in that puzzle.
Yeah, the one thing I will say is terrible in today's conditions and needs to change is what they're going to do with the Mac Mini. Like, at this point, kill it. There's no sign.
It's a very important product in their lineup.
That's what they say. There's no signs of life in it. And
it's so important. They don't talk about it, and they don't care about it, and they don't update it. But it's really important to them.
Yeah. I don't get that part. Like, maybe they're waiting to get the iMac Pro and the Mac Pros out, and then the MacBook Pros in better shape and other stuff, and then they're going to work on it.
The Mac Mini just keeps pushed down the list.
Yeah.
Do you know what the base price of a Mac Mini is? $600.
That's crazy.
And no one, if you actually want a Mac Mini, you'd have to buy, like, the high-end configuration, which is like $900. It's like, come on, Apple, sort it out.
Yeah, yeah. So
sort it out.
So that, I think, needs to, like, something needs to happen there. And if they don't have time to address it, then kill it and stop selling today's, you know, for
yeah, it's like Mac Mini, MacBook Air, and iPad Mini are kind of all in that same bucket of, like, sort it out.
Yeah, I mean,
and I think the MacBook Air story is actually going to get resolved this year.
Right.
Probably getting replaced by this kind of, like, 13-inch Retina MacBook thing. iPad Mini, no outlook there. I think eventually it's going to go away completely. And they haven't done it yet, despite bringing out the new 329 9.7-inch iPad. And then the Mac Mini, who knows what's going on with it? Because it doesn't compete. Like, the iPad Mini and the 9.7-inch iPad are close competition. The Mac Mini is, like, this weird alien in the lineup. Like, you have all these all-in-ones and combined machines, and then you have Apple talking about them recreating a modular Mac from the ground up. And it's like, well, you do actually have a modular Mac down at the other end of the product line. You just forget about it and never update it. So it sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, I know it has its purpose in that a lot of people use them today for various things that are not, like, using a mouse and keyboard with a Mac as a daily computer. I used to use one every day if it was my daily computer, but it was a pretty good while ago. I know people still use them as, like, media solutions and, like, home servers, but like, I wonder
servers. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I just wonder how many people, like, buy them new today, like, go into an Apple store or order from apple.com, like, a new Mac Mini today for that purpose or any other purpose, you know, versus, like, using existing ones for those reasons. I wouldn't recommend it, but not because there's a new one rumored or anything. So
the thing is, the Mac Mini fits perfectly into Apple's sensibilities of making, like, a cool little box that's thin and small and pretty. Like, they could probably, by now, they could refresh that thing and make it a third the size of what it is.
Sure.
And they'd, like, that's like a perfect Apple product, right? It fits all of their checkboxes of, you know, industrial design of making it small and compact and just the bare essentials. They've already got rid of the optical drive. They could push it down even more. They could, I think, if they did refresh the Mac Mini, they'd probably pull, like, a 12-inch MacBook on it and do, like, a fanless CPU, so then they can make it even smaller and all of that. There's a lot of design space there for them to play with, but they just leave it to languish. So
maybe that Mac Mini will be the first desktop Apple chip powered Mac, and that's when they'll replace it in 2020 or something.
They're waiting for the ARM transition. Yeah. It goes to 2020. They've still got the same Mac Mini. Oh my!
It's going to be a good year. All right, let's talk about
rough, rough, rough situation.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about the here's one more thing for the Mac to discuss. So this is news coming out shortly that Apple shared with us early, which is that they're going to start pushing the 32-bit app warning on macOS 10.13.4, the latest version of High Sierra that's not in beta but already out. And the app warning is just a dialog box that says, this app is not optimized for your Mac. If it's a 32-bit app, if it's 64-bit, you don't see the warning. And if you do see the alert, nothing happens. You just say okay, and then you know that you need to find a new version of that app or a replacement of that app, because probably with like Super High Sierra, the next version of macOS, whatever it's called, it won't work in the same way. Something about it will change, and then like probably another version of Mac will OS will probably make it not work at all anymore. And we saw this in the beta for 10.13.4. But then it didn't happen whenever the actual release came out, and Apple says it's because they timed it to happen 2 weeks after the release was already out for some reason. So, you know,
that was. I thought you were going to give a reason that it's like, no, they just decided to do it 2 weeks later.
So what they say is that on April 12th at midnight local time, the first time that you launch a 32-bit app, that you'll see that dialog pop up where it says this app is not optimized for your Mac. This app needs to be updated by its developer to improve compatibility. This is really similar to what we saw with iOS last year, starting in 10.3. And then by iOS 11, you couldn't even launch 32-bit apps anymore. They're being less aggressive about that on the Mac. They seem to be taking their time there. Probably yeah, because
you're going to have compromises.
Yeah.
Undisclosed compromises.
Exactly. But the big new part of this is that they have a new knowledge base article support document detailing what's happening here, like why they're doing this, you know, the appeal of 64-bit, and then, you know, what you can do to check if any of your apps are 32-bit. So what they say is, from the Apple menu, choose About This Mac, then click System Preference button. From the System Report, scroll down to Software, then select Applications. When you select an individual application, you will see a field titled 64-bit Intel. Yes indicates 64-bit. No indicates 32-bit. And in doing this, I really don't have very many 32-bit apps. One of them is Apple's DVD player app, which is built into macOS. You just have to imagine that gets pulled out of like 10.14. I doubt they will update it. Ink Server from Apple. I guess that's something. And Compressor from Apple, which is a Mac App Store app. And that was updated this week. Now, there are rules in the Mac App Store that as of January 1st, 2018, you can't submit 32-bit apps as new or updates. So if this is really 32-bit, then they're kind of skating around that, and hopefully they're updating it soon.
Apple would never go outside the restrictions they set on third-party developers.
But other than that, I only have one app, which is Levelator, which is like an audio editing app that has been long discontinued. I think most apps that are 32-bit are like openly discontinued. Like there's no sign of support, and there's no like pretending or their compressor. So hopefully it isn't a big problem for people. I mean, have you seen any 32-bit apps on your machine yet or lately?
There's like a video conferencing app that I use occasionally that doesn't support 64-bit. I'm sure there's like some random like tax apps and stuff that are all old but still really used. But
yeah,
the whole point of this alert, It's not to tell the customer anything, because they're just going to click OK and forget about it. It's to put pressure on the developers to update it.
Yeah, like, well, I think it makes
some fraction of your user base email the developer complaining
right,
about,
because yeah.
The alert will say like, please contact the developer or the developer needs to update the application. And the people that it will just, it's like a shaming alert for like the users, some fraction of the user base to email developers saying your app's old and cranky, you need to update it. And then that puts pressure on the developer to actually go, oh, Apple's serious about cutting
exactly
our old apps off. We need to do something about it.
In the FAQ, there's even a section called for how do I get in touch with the app developer? And they say the easiest way to contact a developer is to look them up on the web, to find the name of the developer of an app, open the app, then click the app name in the menu bar and choose about. So they're basically saying Google it and then email them, you know.
Yeah, and then complain at them so that when we cut it off in the fall, you're okay.
Yep. So... I mean, the biggest thing here is that I wondered why in beta it was there, and then when they launched, it wasn't there. And I just assumed that they kind of backpedaled for this release, and that maybe it would be in another version of macOS.
And they were waiting exactly 14 days.
14 days, yeah.
How did you not foresee that?
I know, right? So, but there we go. This what they say is that the first time you launch the 32-bit app, it'll appear one time. You can say okay, or you can click learn more, and it takes you to the support document and explains everything for you. And then after that, you won't see it again unless you...
I'm interested in what these compromises will be. Like,
yeah.
The next big question here is like how... badly is it going to be? Is it going to be emulation? Is it going to be virtualization? Is it going to be the apps still work, but you get a pop-up every single time you launch it saying it's outdated? Like, there's a big spectrum there, and it doesn't... The with compromises doesn't sound like you're not going to be able to launch them at all, which is the approach they took with iOS 11.
Yeah, so I'm somewhere not...
below that. And I think that reflects, like, the slower update cycle of a Mac app, and
yeah. Like,
generally the store's less... controlled, and you have all these third-party aftermarket stuff that you can download from the web, and all those mm-hmm. tools are less maintained than, you know, like the top iOS app. So it makes sense they're doing a slower rollout, but I'm waiting for WWDC for them to explain what these compromises will be.
Yeah, I'm not sure they know yet either. Like so I had a short briefing about this, and the way they described it was, you know, it might be some kind of a compatibility mode or something else. Like that was it. They're not sure yet. And then
maybe they're waiting to see how much backlash there is to the pop-up, and then before sure. they decide how aggressive they can be in cutting everything off.
Yeah, and they also said on the briefing, and I think in this document, that they're working with developers who don't have their apps updated yet to, I guess, either say we're not going to update. Like we see, I think Nicecast has one that we saw recently that said we're pulling support because of this reason. But I think that they're trying to encourage on their end the kind of things that they want to see, which is update your app to 64-bit, and then they're kind of judging based on that. Like, are there any big apps left that need to update? And then now we can enforce this, so you know, smaller people know what to do, or can really be cut off and encouraged to update their apps. So, and the thing is, like, for the Mac, you know, 64-bit is not new. Like for iOS, iOS 11 was the cutoff. But like the 5S was the first 64-bit processor. And then for the Mac, like, I don't know how long ago, but it's been a long time, like, you know, a decade maybe, I don't know. So, why are they doing this for the Mac, do you think? Like, I mean,
it's the same reason as iOS. Like, it doesn't make sense to load two copies of all the frameworks to support both platforms, and
yeah,
they can get memory efficiency down, they can get some performance improvements just by making people move forward.
Like, right, yeah. Yeah.
It's not a huge... Like, the reality is it's more of a problem with memory pressure on the mobile devices, because obviously mm-hmm. Macs have more RAM, but you're still going to save memory and stuff, and they don't have to worry about old, you know, legacy code paths. And eventually, you could foresee them doing processors that can benefit by not having to worry about, like, the 32-bit execution, if you see what I mean. Like, eventually, they could do... like on iOS, they could design the A12 chip, for instance, to not include some stuff that was required to do 32-bit calculations.
Yeah. Do you think there's any...
Currently, with A11, like, it still supports it. They just restrict it in software. And theoretically, they could move the same direction on the software, on the hardware side for Macs as well. The main thing is, at the short term, it's like you get a small performance boost from being a 64-bit app, because you can take advantage of some special software things like tag pointers and things. And any time you have at least one 32-bit open, you have to have like another copy of all the system frameworks loaded in memory,
right,
basically. Yeah. So if you have no 32-bit app at all, you don't need it. So you're basically cutting your memory usage in half on yeah. those frameworks that are loaded.
Do you think there's any part of this that is, you know, marzipan related, which is in some future version of all the software versions, it will be possible for developers to more easily target each platform? And so on the customer expectation, like if it's an iOS app, it can easily be a Mac app. And then there won't be this divide of like, well, the Mac, there are also apps that are 32-bit. On iOS, they're only 64-bit.
I don't think the 32-64 split makes much of an impact on the marzipan thing, because Apple already supports fat binaries. You can put different slices of different architectures in. I mean, like on the App Store, they still ship 32-bit binaries for the older devices. Like if you have an iPhone 4S, you still wouldn't be able to run an app, right? So if
yeah.
you can download it, it's just slices out the right configuration for your current architecture. And from what we understand at the moment, marzipan is primarily like a UI framework.
Mm-hmm.
And at that level, the differences between 32 and 64 aren't really apparent. So
okay.
it's going to be a very small difference on that level. So I can't see the connection to a Marzipan thing with forcing 64-bit. I'm sure that Marzipan will be a 64-bit only platform, but they could have done that and still supported 32-bit on the Mac, if you see what I mean. Like, they could have just said, if you want to put your iPhone app on the Mac, then it's going to be 64-bit by design. But they didn't necessarily have to cut off 32-bit to do that in the first place. And everyone would do it. Like, everyone that has an iPhone app, is, as long as it's simple, they're going to put an app on the Mac in a blink. Like, it doesn't really make a difference. Like, you don't need... Because you're going to have to do a rewrite and some changes anyway. Like, it doesn't really make sense for them to force all the current Mac apps that aren't using the new frameworks to update from 32 to 64 just because this new framework's coming in. Like, it doesn't really make a difference there.
Yep. And another change that's happening in the app space is we noticed this week that on watchOS beta 4.3.1, that now whenever you launch an app that has not been updated for, say, watchOS 2 or later, you get a new warning that says... App,
the shame sheet.
Yes.
That's my new name for them.
App needs to be updated. This app will not work with future versions of watchOS. The developer of this app needs to update it to improve its compatibility. Now, we knew that starting April 1st, a new app update or app submission needed to be built for watchOS 2 or later. That's why Instagram went away. That's why a lot of other apps have been away. I saw that August, the smart lock makers, they actually updated their app for this reason. So their old app was made for watchOS 1. To keep offering an Apple Watch app, they needed to update. So they did. They shipped a new version of their watch app this week, and it looks totally different. I imagine it works a lot better. But seeing what does the old version look like, and then let me update the app, and now let me see the new version, I got this alert on my watch running the beta. And that's the first time that we've seen that they're saying it won't work with a future version of watchOS, which if you make a prediction here, I think it's pretty reasonable to say probably watchOS 5 won't run any of these apps, which is why they're enforcing this in the first place. So this is more apps than I thought. Like CalcBot is another example from the people that make TweetBot, ChatBot. So that's a calculator for the watch. I think it's a pretty good one. There's no built-in calculator. I've used this on the watch to like check for a tip amount, for example, and I found it very useful. But if it doesn't get updated for watchOS 2 or later, it looks like watchOS 5 might drop it.
And there's an easy test if you don't want to run the betas, but you want to find out if you're going to be affected by this on the watch side, is that if you turn on like airplane mode on your phone, then the watch can't communicate to the phone.
Yeah.
But obviously the watchOS 1 apps all worked by communicating back to the phone to know what to do. So if you try and launch a watchOS 1 era app when the phone's not in range or disconnected, it will just come up saying, you need to connect to your iPhone to
use
this.
It'll give you that red iPhone.
Red light with a line through it, that one.
So
if that happens, then they're going away.
Yeah, unless they update, which this is, and this is just like a point update to watchOS 4.3. So this isn't in watchOS 4.3 yet, so it's only in the beta for now. And as to why we have 4.3.1 and not like 4.4 or something, I don't know. But this is in beta now, and so I imagine that whenever this version comes out, there's going to be a lot of apps with this warning. And then with watchOS 5, say in the fall,
There might not be a lot of apps because a lot of them already removed themselves, as we talked about.
Proactively removed themselves. That's true. But unfortunately, there are a lot of original Apple Watch apps from like day one or the first few months before watchOS 2 came out that are in this camp. So, if they're not removing themselves, they just won't work in the future. And this is an example. I think this is mainly like Apple just wants to encourage better watch apps, and they're taking the step to say to developers, we're not going to keep supporting this old stuff anymore. And so if you buy a new Apple Watch in the fall, it will come with watchOS 5 and probably won't work with a lot of the apps that are out there. So, and then maybe at that point, Apple takes steps to actually remove them from the App Store too, like if they're not being pulled already. So some more changes there. I hope, we discussed last week and recently that, there needs to be a good reason for developers to make good watch apps again. And it's not a good time to start now, that wait until WWDC and see what you get. But I hope there's some good stuff coming at WWDC for watch apps, because otherwise we're at a point now where the catalog isn't massive and great and needs a lot of attention, but it's only going to get wiped out with this move.
Yeah, if they don't provide some better developer stuff, these apps aren't coming back. Like, that's my
Yeah, that's right. So.
It's sad, but true position.
Yeah, goodbye, Calcbot. So we'll see what happens there. And then finally, let's wrap up on a happier note, which is that friend of 9 to 5 Mac, Kyle Seth Gray, has discovered and shared with me that the next Apple Watch activity challenge will happen on Earth Day. He uncovered the animated stickers that will be unlocked whenever you complete this challenge. The challenge is only a 30-minute workout on Earth Day, which is April 22nd, a Sunday this year. And last year, it was a run, walk, cycle, wheelchair, or swim workout of half an hour. This year, it's any workout of half an hour. So I guess if you want to go and ski or do some of those new snow activities, they needed to loosen it up a little bit. So, and then the award that you get, the medal for the achievement, is the same as last year's design, with like a navy background, gold numbers, and like an earth kind of gradient in the middle. But it's updated for 2018, and then one of the stickers is that, but animating in. It's really clever. Another one is a windmill. Another one is like the recycling logo going in a circle. So you can see those in action on the website, and we look forward to that challenge coming up. And that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. So if you enjoyed the show, let us know. We're on Twitter. I'm at Apollo Zach. Benjamin, you are?
BZA Mayo.
You can also email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. And with that, we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.